Yoga in all its forms has been a support for me in my life, through all the highs and lows. It's opened my mind and my heart in ways I never knew were possible. It has been a teacher, a taskmaster, and a friend. This podcast is an offering. I wish to share the teachings of yoga with you as a tool to help navigate life. Namaste, and welcome. Welcome. I'm so happy you're here. So one of my favorite teachers is Joseph Campbell, and some of you are familiar with his quote, "Follow your bliss." He did a show with Bill Moyers many, many years ago that you can find on probably YouTube, The Power of Myth. Joseph Campbell is just, he's an amazing teacher. But anyway, some thoughts were floating around in my head, and I thought I'd see if they made any sense to you, whomever is listening. So one of the myths that he talks about is the idea of the dragon, the symbolism of the dragon. So you have what he talks about as a dragon that is kind of blocking you in and trapping you in your own life. He tells a story about a woman that was seeing a therapist, and I think it was a Jungian therapist, and she was really feeling depressed, very, very depressed, very isolated, very lonely. And the imagery of this, he said, you know, draw a picture of what this therapist said, draw a picture of what this isolation and loneliness feels like. So she drew herself, and her body was kind of stuck in all of these rocks. But inside of the rocks, you could see they were gold. So she's trapped in these rocks, unable to get out, but the rocks themselves have gold within them. Now this gold would symbolize vitality and life. But she's locked in there. And they do some work with, you know, this idea of this isolation and depression and how to shift her perspective. And after a session, she draws another picture, and it's like this, she draws this lightning bolt that strikes the rocks, breaks them open, and now the gold was covering all the rocks, and the gold that was inside the rocks is now accessible to her. It's actually like almost like lava pouring out of the rocks to this person, to this woman. And she realized in all of these sessions that followed that those patches of gold were, she realized that they were representing the gold that was already present in her life. And she identified them as the friends that she has, that she actually wasn't alone, but that she herself had locked herself into her own little isolation, her own little bubble, her own little world. And it doesn't go into, you know, why or what was at the root of that. He doesn't in this discussion. But what he teaches is that we must slay our own dragons. And so this killing of the dragon is in line with the myths and symbolism of, for instance, the European dragon, you know, the European myths. But then he talks about another kind of dragon, which is represented more in the Chinese myths, and that dragon itself will represent vitality. It's like the Naga. Any of you that have ever been to Menla Retreat up in Phoenicia, New York, His Holiness the 14th Dalai Lama visited there and informed everyone that they have a Naga or a serpent or a water dragon that lives on this beautiful property. So this is representing bounty. It's representing, you know, this great glorious energy. Whereas in the other symbolism of a dragon, it can be something that's blocking you or holding you back and you have to slay the dragon. But here's where Joseph Campbell gets a little more specific about the energy of the dragon. He says, the dragon is in you. The dragon is in us. There is no dragon outside of us. So in other words, if we look at this woman, it's like a me and my story. She had things that happened to her in her life, we can assume, that made her build up these feelings of isolation and depression. When she did the work on herself to slay this symbolic dragon, she realized, what am I talking about? I've got friends all over the place. There's gold pouring out of my life and into me and back out again all over the place. But she, in her reaction to her story, whatever that may have been, the dragon was blocking her from realizing her potential, her vitality, her gifts and blessings in life. So the dragon is your ego that's kind of holding you in, you know, that ego that says, if this is all about what I want and what I believe and what I can do and what I think I love and even who I think I love, what I regard to be the aim in my life. These eyes can actually pin us down. They can actually corner us. So it kind of depends, according to Joseph Campbell, on where did these ideas come from, that you love this and that you will study to be this, or that you will even not like these other things. If there's a certain environment that you're in, the environment can be the dragon, because it's kind of telling you how to live. It's kind of telling you, it would laugh at the term follow your bliss. It would, like, I don't even understand that, what that is. I remember a long time ago, Brené Brown, who is a research, analyst, teacher, scientist, on, she's known for researching shame. And there was an interview she did with Elizabeth Gilbert, the author of Eat, Pray, Love, amongst other books. And she had a podcast called Big Magic. I think it was Big Magic, but she had a book called Big Magic. She interviewed Brené Brown, and it was about creativity, because it's Eat, Pray, Love. It's Elizabeth Gilbert. They're going to talk about creativity. And Brené Brown came right out of the gates and said, if you had asked me even so much as a year ago what I did to be creative, and if I, you know, knew how to play, I guess she said something like that. She said, I would have said to you quite directly, you have fun with your ART, but I have a J-O-B and I'm going to go do my job. And she didn't understand that creativity and play and artistic expression, however that shows up in your life, is vital to our mental health and well-being. And she chewed on those words. You know, she said, it was really an ignorant thing for me to say, but that was the mindset she was in, because her environment always reflected back on her that you keep working, that you do, that you strive, that you work harder. You don't play. Play is something you schedule if you're lucky to have time for it. And what Joseph Campbell, in my perception, is, that he's saying is, it's not a laughable term to follow your bliss. It's actually, if you follow your bliss, then you will inspire me and others to follow our bliss. And that doesn't mean that we're all just hanging out by the pool drinking pina coladas. It means we're actually figuring out and doing the work, investigative work, introspective work, meditative work, skill building work, to figure out who we are. What are our likes and dislikes? For real, not what do we think they are because of what's mirroring back at us in our environment or the way we were raised and so on and so forth. I was thinking of this Gilmore Girls episode, if anybody's ever seen the Gilmore Girls, and Lorelai, the mom in the show, comes from very wealthy parents. She's an only child from wealthy parents, and she's done her best her entire life to live completely opposite of her parents and all of that wealth. And she's a woman who, from the age of 16, left home. And one episode, she has all of these conflicting experiences happen And she comes to the realization, is it possible that I like what I like because my mother wouldn't like it or because my parents wouldn't like it? So do I even like Pop-Tarts, or do I just like Pop-Tarts because I know my mother would hate Pop-Tarts? That's a funny story, or it's a silly TV show, but it's a doorway in. That was a moment for that character to have this awakening to go, wait a minute. Okay, so let me stop and look at why I love Pop-Tarts. Do I, or is it as a reaction to an environmental oppressive feeling or familial oppression? Am I rebelling through the Pop-Tarts? Knowing that you've rebelled through the Pop-Tarts is a light shining on the fact that you have been all along trying to build your own character, but now you get to hone that skill set and just do your thing that brings you bliss. And maybe it is that you like Pop-Tarts, but you're not going to be living your life as a reactivity to other lives, whether it be I'm doing everything everybody tells me to do, I'm being what everybody expects of me to be, or I'm rebelling against. It's neither. Those are two extremes. Instead, you are going inward and saying, what is it that I like, this or that? And building a comfortable relationship and an intimate narrative with the self where you find this place of neutrality, where you have discovered the areas in which maybe you act in an extreme way. And now you realize, maybe I don't have to do that. I can just still the waters and find what it is that truly brings me bliss and happiness. If you are doing this, you know, you're really, those are the dragons, by the way. So those are the dragons that we need to slay, because the environment is the dragon, and it's reflected within you and in your behaviors and your choices and in your relationships. So that's when he's posed with the question, Joseph Campbell, of how do you slay that dragon? You follow your bliss and you find out what it is, and don't be afraid to follow it. You know, it can be your life's love or your life's work. And if you think, oh, I couldn't do that, I couldn't be fill in the blank, that's your dragon blocking you. I remember when, this was probably back in 2003 or four, my youngest son, I was going off to a yoga class. I used to go to a local yoga class with my teacher, Deborah Monaco, twice a week, I think. And then it built to three times a week. And my younger son would stay with my mom, who lived with us at the time. And these were very important classes to me. They were 90 minutes of just me. You know, it was in a class, it was a lot of other students, but I would leave my cell phone in the car and I would go into this basement yoga studio in Wantagh on Long Island, Feel Well, I think it was called. And this amazing, wonderful, just joy of a teacher, Deborah Monaco, would facilitate the ability to embody myself, and maybe just for those 90 minutes, because of the busyness of raising a family and running a home and all of the things that life brings to us. And I remember one day just in my yoga pants and shirt, and I threw my yoga mat bag over my shoulder, and my son said, where are you going, mommy? And I said, oh, I'm going to a yoga class. And he said, you're the teacher, right? And I looked at him and I said, oh no, honey, mommy could never be a yoga teacher. And that's just one of the many ignorant things I've said in my life over the years. But I truly felt that I can't do that. I couldn't do that. I couldn't teach a yoga class. I don't, you know, and that was the dragon kind of blocking me in. And I really thought I couldn't do that. And I think it was a year and a half later or so that I found myself in a yoga teacher training, and still didn't think that I could be a yoga teacher until I graduated. And it wasn't so much that I thought I could be a yoga teacher as much as I knew that it would have felt very selfish to not share what I had just learned and been transformed by. So what is it that you think you couldn't do, but you want to do? And thinking you can't do it, that's your dragon kind of blocking you in. And Joseph Campbell says, save yourself and you save the world. Because that might seem grand, but it's the truth. If you take care of yourself and what you love, then that reverberates into all of your life. That it doesn't just affect you or even just the people closest to you, but it actually has a really amazing effect on just the vibrational energy and how it's felt. You know, we're all energy and we're all exchanging all the energy all the time. I think of that quote by Carl Jung. He says, the greatest burden a child must bear is the unlived life of its parents. This one just has always stopped me in my tracks. The greatest burden a child must bear is the unlived life of its parents. Think about that. You know, I don't even want to break that one down because that feels like it's a whole episode. So maybe we'll go back to it. But chew on that. When a parent doesn't live their life to the fullest, it's actually a great burden for their children. And in a way, if we look at what we're looking at now, that's one of the dragons in the environment that pins you in when you have parents or family saying, well, you can't go do that. You have to go do this. And that can come from, but not always, the parents not having permission from others that came before them or the courage to follow their own bliss. But that save yourself, save the world. Don't laugh that one off. Okay. It's like in Ayurveda, they say we are the microcosm of the macrocosm. You are a little mini universe within this major universe or universes. When you follow your bliss, when you push that dragon out of the way that's trying to pin you in and tell you, like, you can't do that. And first of all, the louder you hear you can't do that or you couldn't do that, I feel that's when we know it is what we're supposed to follow. I think that what we are most afraid of is what we should head towards. I don't know. But what you discover is a sense of nirvana, a sense of peace, a sense of this like almost repose or place of rest. And this place is inside of you. It is the center out of which you act. So nirvana is not something that we are trying to discover outside of us, like it's got a longitude and a latitude, but it's also not something that anyone else can lead us towards because we already are the experience of nirvana. It's our intrinsic nature to be centered and at peace. But we forget that because of all the things that we go through in our life, right? Nirvana is actually a psychological state of mind, okay? And when you're not able to experience, even touch upon lightly, this sense of peace or bliss or nirvana that is your intrinsic nature, you suffer and tension builds and you can implode, truly. You know, you can implode your life. You can, when you deny yourself the connection to the nirvana that exists within, it's like you probably are walking around life like you feel like you're in the wrong suit or your shoes are too tight or you're an alien of some sort. Because nirvana is a psychological state of mind. And it's right here now, in the middle of your life. It's a condition that comes when you're not compelled by extreme desire, fear, social commitments. You kind of hold your center. You don't kind of. You hold your center and act out of there. But by the way, you need to know what your center is. And that's yoga. yoga and all of the disciplines and all of the meditations and all of the understandings of the workings of the mind stuff, it teaches you where your center is. It shows you, it's a map to your center. Okay. And when you experience that, you hold that center, and very little can rock you out of it. And it's important to still the self in order to hear the small whispers that are the directionals guiding you in your life. But when we're always busy with what's going on the outside, and we're always busy with how we look, and we're always busy with what everybody else is doing, excuse me, we're always distracted on the outside, and we have no idea what our insides are like. And Anne Lamott, who is one of my favorite authors, and I was fortunate enough to see her in the city recently for her 70th birthday and the release of her latest book, one of her famous quotes, I mean, she's just the wittiest and she's the greatest writer and she's so real. If you have not read Anne Lamott, I highly recommend her. But she says, stop comparing your insides to everybody else's outsides. That's what we do. I mean, if that doesn't size up social media, but that's what we do. We're comparing our insides to everybody else's outsides. So whatever you're feeling on the inside, you look outside of yourself to someone else. You just see their bright and shinies because that's all they're showing. So don't compare your insides to everybody else's outsides. That's from Anne Lamott. So follow your bliss. That's a real thing. There are dragons. Slay them. Know them. Get to know them. Tame them, whatever that means for you. And we can look at that quote from Carl Jung in a future episode, but think about it. The greatest burden a child must bear is the unlived life of its parents. Thank you for listening. Hands at the heart center in prayer position. May all beings be happy and peaceful. May all beings be healthy and strong. May all beings be safe and protected. May all beings live with ease. Namaste.